Hey, welcome to No Filter Sports, December 14th. Man, where has 2020 gone? I guess 2020 can't go away too soon. Bob Page, Denny McClain, I'm Eli Zarrett, and off we go. I got through Saturday without Michigan, Ohio State. Did everybody else survive? Were you able to get through the day? You could?
I got through the game flying high.
Go ahead, Denny. You got through the game.
Just absolutely what I do now almost every weekend, watch a little football and get on Netflix as fast as I can.
I haven't been sleeping well, especially over the weekend. This has been on my mind for a while. I hate injustice. I hate unfairness. And above all else, I hate anti-Semitism and I hate racism, which is why I didn't sleep over the weekend, knowing that we have a team in Major League Baseball called the Cleveland Indians. How brutal is that? How unthinking, how racist. And finally, my prayers were answered now that it's been announced that the Indians are in fact going to change their name, a name they've had since 1914.
Let's see. How can we possibly change a name? You know, there's certain things in sports. It has to be a 9-game season. It has to be this many games. It has to be played from this month to this month. There have to be this many teams in the playoff. It doesn't have to be anything. And you know what? Well, the Washington football team is having a hell of a year, and we don't even remember that they were called the Redskins. They're the Washington football team, and they're kicking ass and taking names, and they won again. And it's not going to make one fan go, one fan not go, or make any difference in the world. So be as outraged as you like. They can call them the Cleveland Spiders again, which they were back whatever it was. They can call them the Cleveland.
And now the Cleveland baseball team.
Who cares? Big
you.
Deal.
You care, and the reason you care is because you're out front leading the cheers, and I'm right behind you, and Denny is too, supporting you about the PC bullshit. Sorry, Brandon, I know you have to make an edit there. That's going on in this world today. When you can't say the name Indian, it's been going on
for
a while.
You can say the name Indian. I think that's not, you can say, in fact, you can still say Christmas. Are we supposed to not be able to say Christmas anymore? Isn't that a dirty word now? Who cares, Bob? I understand.
You care. I just said you've been the one that's decrying this PC nonsense.
I agree.
There's no end to these morons out there. There's nothing stopping these morons out there.
Make everything the same. I say they call them the Cleveland white guys.
Listen,
let's call them the Cleveland Caucasians. I think that will be a great name. And you know what? They could even allow to have some black. They could even have an Indian on that team.
Guys.
They got Moroccans. They can have everything. Let's call them the Cleveland Caucasians. Great name.
Listen, the guys who've got all the money, it's amazing how things happen and how they all of a sudden wind up with more money coming down the hallway. And by that, I mean that with the new shirts and the new Cleveland, whatever the hell they're going to be called, now they've picked up probably another $10, $20, $30 million in income. Just
you're right.
Jerseys, you know what? And the pants and the shoes and the balls and the bats. And
well, that'll be popular, Denny. Can't you just see the T-shirts? Absolutely. The T-shirt saying the Cleveland baseball team. Denny, that won't even fit on a T-shirt unless the print's so small. And their fans call them the tribe anyway. Can they not say the tribe anymore?
Right. Well, Jews call themselves the tribe also. The tribe
and I are talking about two different things. We're not on the same tribe.
Come on, man. Hey,
I got plenty of friends who are Indians fans. That's what they call me. How's the tribe going to do this year?
What's wrong with the tribe?
He played nothing. If you can't call them the Indians, surely you can't call them the tribe.
Why? Why can't you call them the tribe?
It's got to be racist and
no, it isn't.
I'll tell you what.
You can use tribe.
You know, I was thinking about it the other day.
Time out. You meet a fellow Jew. Oh, you're a member of the tribe?
Yeah, are you a tribe?
Tribe is a name. Tribe is a word with a definition. And the fact that they started about Indians doesn't mean that tribe is a pejorative.
Now look back to the great years of 1968 and 69 when Denny McClain was in his heyday. One of the words you would use to describe Denny McClain is you say, boy, that guy's a warrior. Denny was tough. He pitched over pain. He was awesome, man. But Marquette decided a few years ago that warrior is a pejorative term because people associate that with Indians. So they changed their name and dropped the warrior. That's an Eastern Michigan, but that's, was always you know the what? Hurons. You can't even say the name of an Indian tribe anymore because it's racist, which is why Eastern Michigan changed its name to the lame-ass Eagles. Have we had enough, boys?
Where are the Chippewas? Chippewas are still.
Yeah, you know, and you know what's going on with that. There are all kinds of, you know, payments, secret hush money payments. So, Fred Heumann talked about that on one of these shows a while ago.
And I don't understand. See, I just, maybe I'm just stupid, but I just don't get it. I don't know why anybody would be upset after 1,000 years they've been called the Cleveland Indians, the Washington Redskins. I don't get it. Why is it so sacred?
Well, because Redskins was a negative term.
No, it's a baked potato.
Chief Wahoo was a stereotypic thing.
We've talked about that. Okay. That had to go.
Okay. So in other words, Pete, listen, you know, I speak out about PC as much as you do. The great PC story that concluded this week was the Sarah Fuller story.
Yeah, let's Vanderbilt. Get
and you know what? And seriously, that's okay. You know,
sure it is.
It's okay. You had to. What wasn't okay was that the coach lied about it, because the regular kicker came back to Vanderbilt and he kicked the 39-yard field goal. His name is Pearson Cook, but they let her kick the extra point to finish the story. And let's just put it this way. You know, there's been so many women from the Kim Ng, who is now the general manager of the Marlins, to Sheryl Sandberg was on TV this week. She's worth $1.8 billion. Women can do anything they're capable of doing now in America. This is a good thing. They're not capable of being, and if a woman was good enough to kick a field goal one foot further than Matt Prater or anybody else in the NFL, they'd be hired. It's not anti-woman. Right. It's what can you do? How well can you play? So it's a phony story, and I'm glad it's over, but the coach lied. The coach lied. He said, you see, the regular kicker was back, but you see, we let Sarah kick the two PATs because she was great from 10 yards in. So she's been accurate inside the 10. She's going to get those other kickers going from further back, as if to say that the guy who kicked it from 40 yards couldn't have kicked it from 18 like she did. Okay. So no, we don't want him to do it. We want her to do it because she's good from 10 yards in.
All right, now this is an ancillary issue. I want to steer this conversation back to the Cleveland Indians. I haven't been on the Cleveland.com website, the Cleveland Plain Dealer, the editorial page. I want to see and read the comments from, and the Indians have a great, as you know, a great fan following. I want to see and read the comments from the fans about changing the name from the Cleveland Indians to whatever, the Cleveland Baseball Club. And speaking of total bull feces, boys, what a farce the Big 14 continues to make of itself. As big a farce as calling a Midwest league with 14 teams in it, now in New Jersey and elsewhere, the Big 10. Nebraska plays Rutgers this coming Friday. What on earth would that have to do with a matchup in the Big 10? So listen, time was not long ago when you played the regular season, wound up with a winner in the West Division of the conference, winner in the East. When the season was over, they met the very next Saturday night on national TV for the conference title. Now, have you seen the schedule? Ohio State and Northwestern are going to play at noon this coming Saturday, followed by a stupid slate of make-up and made-up who-cares games on a couple of Friday as well. They call this Champions Week. With the exception of Ohio State, they should call it Losers Week. As stupid as NASCAR. You know how that works? What, they start the NASCAR season every year with their Super Bowl, the Daytona 500. Then they go on and they run the rest of the races. You excited about Michigan State,
see,
Maryland?
Bob,
about Michigan's game at Iowa, Eli?
Go ahead, Danny, go ahead.
It's just Zippo stuff. I mean, it's just, it's nothing. Who cares? I mean,
it is nothing.
Really don't care. You know, in fact, everything we've done here the first 10 minutes, people don't care. I mean, they really don't.
That's the problem we have. Exactly what? Listen, you know, not to get too far afield here, but the experts will always tell you that to raise children, you have to be consistent. You have to have consistent actions, responses, and discipline. If you don't, they become wary, suspicious, and lack trust. And that's what's happening to sports fans. You know, when you do it to kids, they become dysfunctional. Sports fans are confused. The Big Ten says, we're not going to play. Oh, okay, let's play. Let's have an 8-game season, must play 6. Well, maybe 5, depending on who you are or how I feel about you. 7.5% infection rate and you're done. Oh, maybe not. Oh, you won't tell me the infection rate? You just say you're not going to play. So Ohio State was going to play another game this week in order to make it 6. They're going to try and get Ohio U or whatever. Then they were told, We're going to make the rule 5 just this once. Listen, the cat has been out of the bag on sports forever. I've been talking about it for the last 40 years. We just see the hypocrisy a little more clearly now. Remember when every game wasn't on TV and the coaches and the writers would vote for the AP and UPI polls based on what somebody told them happened, where they read a report on it in the paper, and that's how the rankings are made and the bowl games are made. And so it's been phony all along. It's just that the emperor has no clothes now, and we see it. So, Bob, You're typical, and I'm saying that in a positive way. You love sports. You're a sports fan. You're not going to stop watching. You get pissed off when they change a schedule or make it, you know, but it's all made up. It's all arbitrary. Yeah. It's what promoters do. Yeah. They're doing the best they can. I'm in a very bad situation.
Eli, there are no rules anymore. They make it up like they go every day. Somebody is going to get pinched and plopped, and somebody's going to play, and somebody's not going to play. And that's the problem with this whole thing, because now they're doing it off the hip. I mean, some of these teams didn't know they were playing the day before, for God's sakes.
Eli, every movie you have ever seen is phony, fake, and it's all made up. You've got directors telling the actors what to say.
Yeah.
If they don't get it right the first time, they do 12 more takes till the director says, okay, I'll accept that one.
Or they can change the script.
They can change the script. Yeah. Everything you see on Broadway, when Broadway operates, is all phony. It's all made up. They're wearing costumes. So you can say, virtually everything's phony, or as Carole King once wrote, only love is real. Isn't that a beautiful thing to write? But Jenny, you say, who cares? Again, you ask the Cleveland Indians fans today, who cares? You think they care? They're going to call it the Cleveland baseball team. You're goddamn right they do, Denny. A lot of people care.
I will tell you this. My icon in my life was Lou Boudreau, and he knew more about the Cleveland Indians than just about anybody.
He's rolling over, your father-in-law is.
Well, I'm sure he is. I'm sure he is, because he was never a proponent for it. He never wanted it. When they were doing all those polls years ago, Lou always jumped up first and said, no, that doesn't work. I said, how could you change 50, 60, 80 years of history? You can't do that. It's just wrong. Well, the Vex fought it. They didn't have to fight it very bad because there was no big movement. But eventually, you know, Lou left Cleveland. And of course, a lot of crazy things have happened since then. But you know what? I'm going to say one more time, nobody cares. And no matter where I go, and I don't go very many places, I'll qualify that right away. But I will tell you this, anybody I run into during the day, none of them say, hey, what do you think of the Cleveland Indians?
Oh, well, you go over to Cleveland when autograph signings start happening again.
Hey, Bob,
you start signing in Cleveland, see what they think about that.
Bob, well, I love Cleveland. They're big spenders over there. I love them.
If they were still called the Cleveland Indians and won 80 games, so many people would come. If they called the Cleveland, whatever they are, and they won 90 games, more people would come. Sure. The name doesn't matter. Meanwhile, along the lines of what you just said about how it's all phony and acting and all that, the most watched sports entity, I'm going to call it an entity, in 2020 has been just that. It's the Queen's Gambit. 62 million people have watched this story about chess. Chess now has gotten 2.4 million new players on chess.com. Women are encouraged that this fictional character, Beth Harmon, who takes on the Russians and finally wins. 62 million people. Now think about this. That's households. Multiply it by 2, 125 million. Multiply it by $15, which you would pay to go to a movie theater. You have a $2 billion entity, as much as any movie ever grossed in all of its history. So the landscape is changing.
Eli, may I say, I know this, knowing me the way you do, this won't surprise you. I have utterly no idea what you're even talking about.
Brandon, do you know what I'm talking about?
Of course, it's a really big show right now. Yeah,
it's a huge show.
Huge show.
62. You know what he's talking about, Denny, this chess
thing?
Yeah,
sure. Yeah. It's a serial.
As usual, I'm out of it.
On and on. This thing will never end.
Yeah.
Shameless.
And by the way, chess is a sport, by the way. Chess is a sport. And
Bob, if it's a sport, who then are the athletes?
Bob, have you seen the show?
Great players.
Have you watched the serial, the Shameless? Did you see Shameless?
No, but that's with William Macy.
I don't have any idea what it is.
No, I know that. But unless he gets there and watches it and understands that you're going to be there like 3 weeks for this whole thing to go to run.
If you want to watch,
he would have no idea what we're talking about.
Yeah. I watch baseball and I want the Cleveland Indians back. Damn it. That's what I want.
Then well, Bob, you got a great choice, Bob. Or don't watch it all.
I guess. So Eli, Tigers, are you excited about watching Michigan play Iowa Saturday night after the Big Ten championship game was already decided earlier in the day?
Is that what they're going to do? Noon. I didn't even know that.
They're going to play Iowa, and the idiots who run the Big 14 have done it again. There are a lot of us who like to watch both Michigan and Michigan State, yep. And they scheduled them both Saturday night at the exact same time. Michigan State, Maryland. The only thing interesting about this, another look at quarterback Peyton Thorne under game conditions to see if he might be the kid who looked so good in the first half of Saturday lost to Penn State, or the kid who did so little in the second half when the Spartans blew it. Why Michigan is playing again is a mystery to me. One last chance to humiliate themselves. Illinois just fired Lovie Smith over the weekend.
He won't
even be around to coach their bogus game this coming Saturday. Wouldn't it be something if Michigan and Jim Harbaugh did finalize the divorce this week and he wasn't around to coach against Iowa?
Those are great questions. I want to talk about that. Coach K, what he said about college basketball. And all that. And also talk about our special guest today. But first, I got to tell you that so many people over 45, like me, who can't see anything up close, man, is it frustrating when your arms aren't long enough so you can see the small print, or your phone. I've been getting multifocal lens implants. See the tiniest print, see perfectly at a distance. Life-changing, lifetime-lasting procedure. It'll last me as long as I live, hopefully a long time. Of course, people under 45 are still opting for custom LASIK from Dr. Yaldo that enables you youngsters, 45 and under, to once and for all throw those annoying contacts and glasses in the garbage for good. Dr. Yaldo is number one in the Midwest. He has done more of these procedures than anyone else. He is the most experienced. He would not touch your eyes unless he was 100% sure you'd have a great outcome. And by the way, these surgeries for your eyes are the safest with the fewest side effects in all of medicine. Evaluation is free. Cost nothing. Find out which procedure changes your life in ways you can only imagine. The number is 1-800-398-EYES, or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. Tell them they'll filter sports since you mentioned my name, and it turns to gold. You get $1,500 off the regular price. Also, if you're looking for a luxury car, you know where to go. To go to Hoot McInerney's Star Lincoln, where the buying and the service elements are hassle-free, and it's one of the most beautiful dealerships in Michigan. They sell the best luxury car that America makes, the Lincoln, and it's part of why also Lincoln is Michigan, Star Lincoln is Michigan's premier Lincoln dealership. Great family business started by Hoot McInerney years and years ago, the legendary auto giant and philanthropist. Go online, check out all the 5-star reviews. You'll be impressed, too, as you will be with their cars and the service you get. Buying process is sensational. Drive the star of American Auto Luxury at Star Lincoln. Make an appointment at 248-354-4900 or by effortlessly online at starlincoln.com. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. So we can move off chess. You didn't fight me that chess is a sport. It is. It takes a physical condition.
Chess is not a sport. There are no athletes. Stop it. It's a game. It's an activity.
You don't have to pull a hamstring for it to be a sport. Some of these games last 7 hours. You got to be in good shape. Yeah. It's competitive. It takes a lifetime of study.
They do.
You show sportsmanship and respect. There's national. They even have doping rules. They even have doping rules in chess. Gary Kasparov, the great champion, says few things are as psychologically brutal as chess. Okay. I'm with you as far as this whole Big Ten thing, but I don't know how you can expect more. It's the right championship game, Northwestern and Ohio State, and since we're the
audience, shouldn't they have at least played that Saturday night and then played all the other games like Friday afternoon? And
you bring up a good point, because here they're moving everything around at their whim. I mean, they want to play Saturday at 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, whatever it is, not necessarily this weekend, but the next weekend. And why can't they just move the games back and still have the games fit? It makes no difference when they play, where they play.
Well, the NFL to be considered.
Everybody's there all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Now nobody's there, of course.
Now nobody's there.
Yeah.
Well, that's the way the
$75 billion business is sports, and it's lost a third of its money this year. And 2 million people have lost their jobs that depended on sports to make it. It's just an ongoing challenge. Well, how about anything else you want to say about big the football moment of the weekend? Besides Sarah Fuller's successful 2-point after attempts, was that Florida game? Did you see the Florida game where the LSU player, forget his name already, took the guy's shoe on the third and 10? Florida 8-1, a chance to be in the top four. LSU upsets them because one of the all-time great bonehead penalties, Marco Wilson, is this year's Fred Merkel, Jim Marshall, whatever you want to say. Third and 10, Florida's incomplete. Receiver shoe comes off. He throws it, a penalty. LSU then goes on to kick a game-winning field goal, and it costs. And this weekend, Florida plays Notre Dame. By the way, they've each played 10 games, and one of them will not make it to the bowl championships or whatever you call it, the CFA. But Ohio State with 5 wins can make it in. So it's just a crazy.
And I talked about being surprised the last show we did, you weren't here, that there was so little pushback on that. Because, you know, I mean, anything can happen in sports. Who's to say Ohio State wouldn't have been beaten by somebody? And the only comment I've seen so far comes from old Dabo. He says, they don't play 60 games. That don't make them qualifying for no national championship. That just ain't right. Now, he's the only guy who's been talking that way.
Let me understand this. So there's not going to be a championship game, right? I mean, the last game of the season is not going to be Ohio State. And we're assuming Ohio State's going to
win. That is the championship game. Ohio State, Northwestern, just against Northwestern. And they're going to score
50 points against Northwestern.
Should.
What the hell does that accomplish? Somebody tell me.
Well, Denny, you're preaching to the choir. And the Dabble's
Can't get it. I don't understand it. I mean, nobody's going to tune into the damn game either.
Oh, sure they will. I'll watch
for the first quarter until Ohio State's got 35.
Well, you're right. I think Ohio State is definitely worth watching. But, you know, Dabo said what he said is true. He said, you know, it takes 120 hours to get a business degree. Now it only takes 60, which is like saying they play half as many games.
I believe the word is bidness.
Bidness degree.
Takes 120 hours to get a business degree like that.
But Michigan, Ohio. I think sports is pretty arbitrary. People will replace it, and the fact that we didn't see with Michigan, Ohio State the recreation of the Snow Bowl or the 10-10 tie in 73 or whatever his history making things. We got on with our life. In fact, the thing I wanted to see was the final round of the U.S. Women's Open that was rained out. And if you recall, this last year. This is when Hank Haney made the heinous, politically incorrect saying that, well, somebody named Lee is going to win, and they laughed at him. Well, there happened to be Jung-Yoon Lee 6 was the defending champion because the Lee did win last year. And Lee 6 is called Lee 6, not because there's 6 Lees. There's 6 Lees with the same first name also. There's also a bunch of Kims, you know, and so I was rooting for her, Jung-Yoon Lee 6. You know, it's almost like when you watch these ladies go, and this, I'm going to get killed for this politically incorrect statement.
Oh, no.
It's like all they got in Korea is like 3 or 4 last names. There's Ko, there's Kang, there's Lee, and there's Kim.
I know.
It's almost as if, you know.
I wonder why those Asian girls dominate women's golf the way they do. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't. That's been talked about for
a while. I know that they've got such a discipline structure that they get up every day at 5 o'clock. It's like the ice skaters. They get up every morning at 4:30 and they go out and practice for 3 hours. The same thing they're doing with the girls over there who are playing golf.
Why don't the Asian men do that then?
Well, first of all, I think there's a big difference between the U.S. men and Asian men or any other around the country. I mean, our guys are much stronger and bigger. But as far as the ladies go, I mean, it's they just practice. How do you get to Carnegie Hall? You practice.
Well,
you know, they do have Asian tours, and there are a number of Asian players on our tour that are good. Didn't Colin Morikawa? Well, he was an American, though, of Asian descent. I don't know, but our guys
aren't going right now because of the
pandemic,
the illness.
The problem with that tournament was they made the course too difficult. It's in December. It was rainy and cold, and these girls are hitting on a 400-yard par 4. They're hitting 3 wood in. The course made them look like they were really weak and ineffective. They are compared to the men, but under normal conditions with shorter courses and warm weather, they're a beauty to watch. And it was very upsetting to see how poorly they played. They couldn't handle the weather conditions.
I don't understand a lot of this stuff. I don't know how or why I was doing this, but over the weekend I was reading about the Golf Hall of Fame. Oh, I know what it was. I passed it on the expressway driving from New York back home here to Florida. The World Golf Hall of Fame.
Near Jacksonville.
And I yes. How do you get into the World Golf Hall of Fame? Well, they used to have the way a lot of people did it, a lot of guys get in, is you had to have a certain number of victories on one of the tours. And the number of victories was the same whether it was the PGA Tour or one of these Asian tours. So you're telling me that a win on the Asian Golf Tour is the same as a win on the PGA Tour? And then they changed the rules in midstream. They said, well, okay, so from now on, you got to be 50. You got to be 50 to get in, which is why Tiger's not in. He's not in yet because he's not 50 years old.
At 50 years old, you go into the seniors.
Yeah, but he's saying it.
No, that's 50. The seniors tour. I'm talking about the Golf Hall of Fame.
You got to be 50 to get voted in.
Well,
do you understand the Baseball Hall of Fame? Do you understand why Lou is not in and Allen is in? Do you understand why Richie Allen isn't in and other guys are in? Do you understand why?
But they're playing on the same field, Eli. The Asian PGA Tour is not playing on the same field as the American PGA Tour.
Yes.
And as far as the Baseball Hall of Fame, you know, that's a whole different world out there. That's more political now than it's ever been. It's always been somewhat political. And I learned about it in 70 when Boudreau was inducted into Hall of Fame and saw everything that went on. It's a political game. Any of those guys could be elected president on that weekend.
Are you saying, Bob, that the rules are arbitrary? That they can make them up? They're actually different from various sports.
We could go. You know what a crazy world this is. I minded my own business last Thursday night, and I'm watching the NFL Thursday night football game, and Troy Aikman is on the air. He is lamenting New England's struggles in general. He's commenting about the losses on the Patriots defense, players who's left, and I fell out of my chair in front of my TV set. Aikman says, "Well, Jamie Collins has moved on to greener pastures. He's with the Detroit Lions." End quote. Yeah, that's what he actually said.
Yeah, I heard.
I'm not kidding you. And of course, the Lions' latest loss was on Sunday, and now Matthew Stafford hurt his ribs. You know, who knows what's going to happen to him? My goodness. And here are these guys, you know, I ask all the time, and you guys beat me up about this, about who's really running this franchise. Why did they announce the interviews they're conducting for candidates for the team's vacant GM position? On Friday, they said that they had interviewed Vice President of Player Personnel Kyle O'Brien, Director of Player Personnel Lance Newmark, and Director of Pro Scouting Rob Lohman about the opening. You really want to talk to those guys? Just talk to them. You have to make a big announcement
about
it.
They're also in the building because they work for the Lions.
Yeah, so just interview them quietly and don't make a big announcement because everybody's going to react the way I did. Oh, my God.
Well, I mean,
who are these guys they're interviewing?
And, you know, some guys will take that as the no to follow them around. I mean, where somebody calls tomorrow, they'll say Cleveland wants them over there. Oh, God forbid. They go to Cleveland and now they got to be interviewed for the Cleveland job. Lo and behold, you know, the guy just did not get the job in Detroit. Now that follows him around. What happened to him that we can't hire him? What did he say? What did he do?
No, but Danny, the fact that he got interviewed is what is a positive. But, you know, can I say, and if you're implying, Bob, that the Lions have been guilty over the years of some front office mistakes, that I hotly dispute that.
Never. But here's I would never say such a thing.
Something unusual happened yesterday for the second week in a row. I was actually entertained by a Lions game. In other words, I didn't wait for them to blow the lead. I didn't think there's no way they can catch up. Why am I wasting my time watching this? And I think if they've shown any, and I'm sure you'll laugh at this, but I thought it was an example of the last 2 weeks of the intangible in sports, of emotion, of a little esprit de corps, of teamwork. I think the fact that they wanted to show that the joyless rule of Matt Patricia is over. They didn't want to play for him. That's the reason they were his joyless leadership. And I felt that they were more of a unit than I'd seen, that they had something to prove. I was entertained by the game. And, you know, I think there is a modicum of hope that if they get a decent coach, they have enough players to be average. Can they go from average thing. To better? Go ahead.
Let me inject one thing. And I think if you saw a lot of the game, then you're going to identify what I'm about to say.
It was entertaining.
In the second half, they played harder in the second half, I swear to you, mm-hmm. than they have all season long. All of a sudden, something kicked in. Maybe they started to believe in themselves, and they really started playing football. Yeah. Until the kid got hurt, and of course, then you're dead anyway. But boy, I tell you, they were.
You two apologists are talking about victory.
Let me finish.
What's the victory?
Let me finish.
What's an apology? I'm not apologizing.
When's the last time you saw so much hard hitting in a football game in Detroit?
See, but Bob, you, where you're coming from is that you've had this, and you're not alone. This impression or this view or this stance on the Lions for a long time. And if they do something well or they show something positive, then you think it spoils your whole the whole persona you've created for this team. It doesn't. They're still the Lions. They still may not go anywhere. I'm saying on this short-term basis, it showed they're glad that coach is out of there. They played hard. As Denny said, they played very hard. The play at the end of the last game where they knocked out of Trubisky's hands showed an unusual effort at the end of the game. And, you know, where they – listen, their defense is weak. There are holes in it. Rodgers was 26 of 33 for 3 touchdowns. So they have a long way to go. But all I'm saying,
I couldn't stand the guy personally, Eli. I thought he was evil personified. But you better respect what the late Al Davis said. Just win, baby.
Yeah. Well, that's right. Meanwhile,
this other stuff is just BS.
Tell me, and I was almost going to take some sound bites out of the game, but I didn't because maybe it's just me.
Thank you.
But
thank
Mark
you.
Schlereth. Drive. Yeah.
He's terrible.
Crazy. Awful. And the reason, I'm going to explain to you why it is. It's the extra words and the extra phrases. Can't just say Matt Stafford is playing well. He's got to say Matt Stafford is the kind of guy, you know, who this and that. And it just blah, blah, blah. It never ends. And I had to turn the volume down. And he's knowledgeable. He understands the game. He's just so in love with his own voice and the yakety yak yak. But, you know, that's just that drove. The other thing is, and this is probably going to sound very simplistic, but all these catches these guys make by pulling the ball, the gloves. Has anybody done a study of gloves and no gloves? In the old days, he'd play in this time of year. Balls are bouncing off guys' hands. They got bare hands. These gloves must have some kind of stickum on it because these guys catch everything all the time. And I don't know what these gloves are like, but I want to get a pair.
Unless they play for the Detroit Lions and they don't catch everything all the time.
Well, Marvin Jones made a great catch at the end of
the game. Or the New York Jets, for that matter.
Yeah.
I mean, they. You're right. You're right. They're making such catches. It's incredible. It really is. And I mean, listen, I would have to wear 2 baseball gloves to catch any of that stuff. I mean, it's unbelievable the way they catch the ball now.
And the most intelligent thing I heard coming out of the NFL was from Tom Brady, the former Michigan quarterback last week. He was saying, of course, they had a good game. They beat the Vikings and Kirk Cousins on Sunday. Yeah. Tom says now that he has been down in Tampa this short time, he has just bought a place on, you know, Billionaires Row in South Florida. Yeah. And he said, I quote to reporters, "You won't catch me dead living in the Northeast anymore. I love the warm weather and it's been a great feeling. It's amazing just to be at this point of the season outside practicing. The days are so beautiful." And that's why, folks, Mr. Zarrett is going to be spending much time this winter down in Florida. And we're trying to get Mr. McClain to come to his senses.
I got an arthritic knee that screws up in the wintertime. I got bad circulation. I'm done living in cold weather.
Brady. Hey, you know,
Before I forget, did you guys do the story on Brady and the $960,000 he got from the PPE? Did you get that last week?
No,
I don't think so.
He got $1 million from the government for TB12. Right. In other words, for his vitamins and his pep pills and whatever the hell he's selling for TB12, got $960,000 from the government, and then he went out and bought a $2 million yacht. I mean, what's going on here with people?
And to move, and Eli, they say the New York papers are reporting that to move to South Florida, he and his wife just sold their condo in the ritzy Tribeca section of Manhattan, and they sold this. This is an apartment we're talking about, folks. $40 million. They sold it for $40 million.
Why would he get $1 million from the government when he and Giselle are
worth
half a
billion? I'd like to know that, too.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's disgusting.
Yeah. Well, anyway,
his California place now, too?
He's got places all over. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think he's selling that one too, right on the
Malibu. Who knows?
Bob, are you going to read it or am I going to read it? Are you going to read it or am I going to read it, Bob?
I'm going to read it if you and Daniel shut up and let me say, I know that, but Danny won't shut up, damn it.
Danny won't shut up, Bob. Are you kidding?
Oh, my God.
Holy cow.
Bob never gets a chance to talk on this show.
Dear God.
Oh, anyway.
Dear God, don't electrocute him right now. That's the greatest lie Bob's ever told.
Denny, I'm not here. I'm just thinking, Denny, I can just see his mouth open, starting to talk, and he can't.
I'm trying to say something, damn it. And what I was trying to say was that if you were with us last time, you know that we celebrated our 200th edition of the show. And I thanked all of you people. And I especially want to thank all of our great sponsors. And among those is our great friend, Luke Nowacki. Luke's been with us almost since day one, and we just so appreciate him and all of you fans. It's fantastic. We want you to let Luke now of Pinnacle Wealth Strategies help you plan for future family obligations in your own retirement. Now, this guy has a track record of success. He knows the markets. He's got decades of experience, and he's going to create a custom solution for you or your business. You want to call Luke Nowacki at 248-663-4748. He's going to set up a complimentary consultation for you. It doesn't cost anything. He's going to give you advice, tell you what he thinks you should do with your money, lay out a plan that fits your individual needs. And if you feel comfortable, you let Luke do his thing. He's knowledgeable, as I said. He's caring. He's ethical. Luke Nowacki at Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. And again, the number to call is 248-663-4748 with advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates. And with rates at record lows, there isn't a better time than now to call David Hall Mortgage to redo the mortgage on your house. He's served the Metro Detroit community for more than 30 years by consistently offering better options and more personal attention, and in the process has built a resume of thousands of satisfied clients. Hall Financial proudly provides the fastest service in the business, generally three or fewer weeks. It's enabled them to garner nearly 1,500 five-star reviews from Michigan homeowners. Eli will tell you about it. He did a mortgage with them, got great service, and it was done very quickly, and now it's even quicker than ever. So go to davidhallmortgage.com to get started, or just give them a call, 248-308-5000. Hall Financial, remember, lower payments, better options, and more personal attention. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
Can we talk about two other teams? I talk about our Pistons. This is an ongoing story.
You said on a recent show you hated the Pistons and had no interest in anything they were doing.
I do. I agree. How about Mr. Dombrowski
being the president of the Philadelphia Phillies?
I want to talk about, we'll talk about Al Avila, what he said with Dombrowski. But I just want to say, they have overhauled this team to the point of unrecognizability. There are only four people back from last year on the Pistons. The two fossils, Blake Griffin and Derrick Rose, and two other young guys, Svi Mykhailiuk and the rookie last year, Sekou Doumbouya. 16 new players. How are you? By the way, the NBA power rankings are really behind them. They have them 14th out of 15 in the East, ranking just ahead of Cleveland. So here you have a team with 16 brand new parts. The last time they won a playoff game, George Bush was the president. So just what we want. We want a team that you don't know anybody on there. They've never played together before as they are tenants in a hockey arena with no fans and no stars. So, and no potential all-star possibilities. So this is how the Pistons go into the season, creating excitement that's just enough to blow off the roof.
It's been a very long time since the Pistons have created any excitement.
Yes.
I mean, nobody goes to the games. Nobody pays attention anymore. I you know, the old man, he's got to be turning over in his grave at least 10 times.
The second period. One turning over in his grave.
Man, I'm telling you, it is just a horrible thing.
He and Lou Boudreau are doing backflips in their grave.
Yeah, the two of them are up there. And listen, Lou's got him in a gin game, so Lou's winning because Lou will cheat.
All right, Denny, this is going to shock you. Denny wants to talk about baseball. And we talk about Dave Dombrowski going to the Phillies. That's a great hire. We think Dave
great hire.
Is terrific. Right. Yep, yep. Ex-Tigers catcher James McCann did indeed agree to terms with the Mets on Saturday. Yep. He got 4 years for $40 million. Now, he's the Mets' second free agent addition, biggest to date under this new owner, Steve Cohen, who's the richest owner now in all of Major League Baseball. Right. They had signed reliever Trevor May earlier. Now, right there, look at this, boys. Right there, the New York Mets are a better club, not to mention a serious contender. So what have the Detroit Tigers done so far this offseason to make themselves a better club, to make themselves a contender? Looks like they're just waiting on these kid pitchers to hopefully develop, right? That's how they're going to be better?
I just firmly believe they're clearing the decks. I'm going to say it again. I think they're going to sell the club. I don't know. Right now, they wouldn't sell the club during the pandemic. There's no way you're going to get great money for it. But I'll guarantee you that something's going on. They've done nothing except cut salaries out. They're not giving any long-term deals of any consequence. So they're doing something else because you cannot regenerate this team again. Every year. I mean, it's like the Lions. For 60 years, they've been regenerating the team every 12 months.
Might be right about the potential sale, but here's the deal. I sound like Joe Biden. Here's the deal. They can't make any money this year other than what is already on the books. The contract with Fox Sports Detroit is set. That money is coming. The money from MLB is coming. There are no fans in the stands. There's no extra money. So whether they go 162-0 or 0-162, they are in the same place financially. So why should they spend more money? And the interview that Al Avila did in the Free Press was both frank and chilling. He goes, "I look at being disciplined this year and resisting the urge to really try to step up." In other words, he has an urge to step up and make the team better, but he's going to resist that urge so that he doesn't. So the last thing we want to do is go out and spend some money that we're trying to get rid of next year or the year after that. In other words, if I sign another Jordan Zimmerman, I'm going to spend the next 5 years trying to get rid of him. So, you know, right now, he says, as we move forward from the financial losses and anticipate more this year, we're not going to do anything to make the club better except develop the young talent, which I ask you is who?
Yeah, well, we talked about the pitchers, but that's head in the sand stuff, and I'll tell you why. First of all, there will be people in the stands on opening day. This pandemic is at the beginning of coming to an end now. We're rolling out the vaccines. They're going to play 162 games this year. You know they are. So maybe they
Bob,
want to
spend
Bob, money to Bob, get people. You don't
Bob,
know
let
that.
Me interrupt you. Let
you
me interrupt
don't know
you.
That.
Bob, I know for a fact that they were analyzing a schedule with 80 games, with 100 games and 110 or 120. That's what they were analyzing. They were trying to put their budgets together for the year. Now, that was about 2 months ago. I don't know where it stands today. I haven't seen my guy in about a month and a half. But the bottom line...
4 months from now is when the new season starts. Yeah,
absolutely. That's my point. That is my point. They're not going to announce anything until they're sure.
Yeah, but I'm just telling you, things are going to be better.
But Bob, there may not be herd immunity to get people in the stands till June or July.
Right.
You don't know that.
Let's see. I do know this. The pennant should be ours the year after, because with the number three pick in Thursday's Rule 5 draft, Avila selected outfielder Akil Badu.
The name of the year. The greatest name in baseball they just got.
Akil Badu. He was ranked as the Twins' number 13 prospect. So Avila says in a statement, I mean, don't you think people in sports sometimes believe that the rest of us are just stupid?
Yes.
Avila says in a statement, quote, "We've seen the power, speed, and defense from him and are excited for him to work with our coaching staff. He's got the rare athletic ability to be a high-level defender in the outfield and really impact the ball from the left side of the plate." Folks, in 2019, Badu hit .214 with 4 home runs and 9 ribbies.
Man, wow.
He had a .243 batting average in 2018.
But he's already
had Tommy John surgery as an outfielder.
He hit .214, though, but that was against Class A pitching at the lowest level. He has never faced an accomplished pitcher
Can't you just say, you know, we saw this guy play in high school when he was younger. He looked like he had some ability. So, you know, why not take a flyer on him? We know what's going to happen with this guy. He probably
is
never going to help.
Can't
you be honest, for goodness sake, with the fans?
He's also only 20, so, you know.
Yeah. But, yeah, you know, a 214 hitter should be hitting something higher than 214 in A-ball.
Are you with that?
Because I'll tell you, Brandon, I'm telling you, and I couldn't do it now, but 10 years ago, I could still hit 214, I think.
By the way, speaking of baseball, we got Mike Henneman coming up. Now, Mike Henneman is a riot, man.
What a great guy.
I mean, just entertaining, great interview. Those were the days. He was there in the late.
So I'm talking to Mike on Saturday. So we had a great time rapping, and I was telling him kind of the nature of the show. Now we got different guys on from time to time. He says, "Well, who's going to be on the show Monday with you?" I said, "Well, Eli's going to be on the show." He says, "Eli, great, he's coming on the show." I said, "Yeah." And Denny McClain's going to be on the show. He's, "Wow, I can't wait. This is going to be fun."
He is great. there were some characters on those Sparky Anderson teams,
really rock. Hey, I got a question for our resident memorabilia expert. You guys see this story? Wayne Gretzky's rookie card fetched $1.29 million the other day at auction. It's the first hockey card to ever sell for more than $1 million. Mint condition 1979 Opeachy card of Gretz with the Oilers. So it broke the previous high mark set by the same card, which sold for $465,000 4 years ago. But Denny, I mean, I know something about baseball cards. The reason the 52 Topps Mickey Mantle, and for that matter, the 52 Bowman and 51 Mantle are so expensive is because they're scarce. 52 is a high number. The 52
there aren't
Topps.
Any.
But this card of Gretzky's, it's not scarce. What they're saying is it's difficult to land one in high grade with blue borders that show off wear, inconsistent centering, print marks, and other reasons. So is this a poorly made card?
Poorly made. In other words, the square on the front of the card, you know, where the picture of the player sets in, it's probably too far left or too far right. Or the box is too high or too low.
Okay.
It's crazy little thing.
So there are few of them in perfect condition.
Very few.
What do you do with it? $1.3 million.
I guess you'll look at it.
What, you put it on the wall? Do you put it in a drawer? Do you put it? How do you show it off to people?
So $1.3 million, you put it in the bank.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking the other day, I still have I sold off the common cards. I still have all my football childhood superstars. And I swear to you, they're sitting right next to me down here in a drawer. I got a lot of them, and some of them
are
worth a lot of money.
You know, one thing about the football cards, you can use them to start a nice fire in your living room.
Yeah, because they're not as worth as much as some baseball cards.
But I just
was thinking over the weekend, I thought, I had to look at my really cool my Johnny Unitas cards and my Fran Tarkenton cards and Jimmy Brown cards, but I don't. So
you know,
what do you do with this stuff?
And I'll tell you, every once in a while, there'll be a card at a show, football and or basketball, that have some value. But never the value that a baseball card like this thing with Gretzky, it wouldn't even come close to that.
To answer that question, Bob, I save, as you know, my aunt worked for the Topps card company. She designed the boxes.
In Brooklyn,
And so I got 57 through 60 mint condition, all of them. And I look at them, you know, it that's nostalgia, like an old rock and roll song or something. Where was I at the time?
Okay, so you do look at them. You take your cards out and look at them.
I got them in consecutive numbers. I was reading an old Sports Illustrated last night from 1964 where Claude Harmon was given golf tips. So I do look back on it. And that's the part of sports that I like. Where I came from, what it was like when I was a kid. This new version that we talk about now just doesn't really cut it for me anymore. We're going to have
You've convinced me. When we're done with this show, I'm pulling out my football cards and I'm going to look at them.
I never collected them.
And then burn them.
I would never burn them. I'm telling you, if you were a boy as I was, you're 9, 10 years old growing up in Detroit, you open that pack of football cards.
Oh, yeah.
And any Detroit Lion that pops out is a god. And
well, we are the same way in Chicago. Anything that popped out with the Chicago Bears or the Chicago Cubs, we grabbed.
I want to get into, I don't know who you have in the obituaries, but I got one I want to, I'm sure.
I got a not quite obituary, but one that unfortunately is going to become one pretty soon. So if you want to do it, go ahead.
No, I want to do this first. I want to tell you that Feldman Automotive is Michigan's number one Chevy dealer. They got 5 locations. Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, and Highland. Feldman. biggest car dealer in Michigan, has 9 locations, including Feldman Hyundai of New Hudson, Feldman Key of Novi, Feldman's Dodge, Jeep, and Ram of Woodhaven. It's the place to go buy a car because they have more cars than anybody, so you get the best price and the best selection. They also have Michigan's number one pre-owned supercenter in Waterford, known as simply 1-800-PRE-OWNED. You buy a fully inspected and guaranteed pre-owned auto from Feldman, get their exclusive drive for 3 days, love it, or bring it back guaranteed. Can't beat that. Along with the kicker, you get guaranteed credit approval. You'll find what you're looking for at one of Feldman's 9 locations. Again, the massive inventory unmatched in Metro Detroit. Buy online at FeldmanAuto.com with an effortless, hassle-free experience if you don't want to show up. Power Home Solar, America's fastest-growing solar energy company based right here in Metro Detroit. Every one of the Power Home Solar state-of-the-art panels is made in America. With solar energy from Power Home, you save the money, you help save the environment, and you'll never again suffer a costly, infuriating power outage. We had one here in Bloomfield Hills the other day, and it made me say, I am going to buy a generator. I'm going to get one from Generac, which Power Home Solar is partnered with, the nation's largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems. So lower your energy bills, eliminate power outages for good. Power Home is financing starting at $99 a month. Call them at 1-800-POWER-90. Save an additional $2,000. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast, and at this point, we say goodbye to our radio audience in Toledo at WCWA. In fact, I should have said this later, so I got to say it again. You have been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
Before we get to the obituaries, we don't talk about these guys enough because I believe that Michigan State has a real chance to win the national championship this year, unless, as Mike Krzyzewski suggests, they do shut down college basketball, which I don't believe is going to happen. Now, Tom called Oakland the best 0-6 team in the history of mankind coming into Sunday's game at the empty Breslin Center. You know, most coaches are master psychologists, and you know what Tom was doing. He's the best. He's trying to motivate, get his players ready to take Oakland seriously, and they didn't. Not enough, anyway. Greg Campy, we got to have him on this show. 37 years at Oakland University, one of the winningest coaches in all of college basketball. He always seems to have at least one great player who has no business playing at a mid-major level, and this year it's Rashad Williams. He was coming off a 32-point performance in a loss to Oklahoma State and Cade Cunningham, who probably is the best college basketball player out there. He hit 6 of 11 threes. He had 23 points in the first half against Michigan State. Oakland trailed only by 4, and then the kid comes out, hits a 3 to open the second half, and they're down 1 before Michigan State went on and blew them away 109-91. Now, they're going to play Christmas Day at 12:30 against Wisconsin. Michigan is also going to play Christmas Day. I watched Michigan's game, of course, as well. Yeah, and they struggled with Penn State. Michigan's a good ball club. They're also unbeaten, as is Michigan State, but they're not a special team. Now, after the Michigan game, Mike Montgomery, former Michigan State player, longtime assistant to Izzo. He's been in Northern Illinois. Can it be 10 years now? He has been. They come on TV and they play Iowa, number 3 in the country, to Michigan State's 4. Luca Garza, going to be the National Player of the Year. He's been utterly awesome, and they blew him off the face of the planet yesterday. I'm telling you, you know, Iowa's terrific. Michigan State's terrific. Well, Iowa has a chance to win the national championship.
All these are obituaries?
No, getting to the obituaries.
But, you know, I'm surprised. You know, Iowa's ranked 3rd, Michigan State 4th, Illinois 6th. Tons of great Big Ten teams. Wisconsin 13th, Rutgers 21st, Ohio State 22nd, and Michigan is ranked 26th because they're not in the top 25.
They're good, but they're not Michigan State.
You know, I just think they aren't better than that? I'm just kind of surprised. And Hunter Dickinson had 20.7 rebounds, 3 blocks. I don't know.
He's real good. Real good. And well, it's going to be fun when Michigan plays Iowa to see Hunter Dickinson go up against Luca Garza.
And guys, well, it's early. You know, they still got to work out the kinks and everything else, all kinds of set plays and what have you. So give them another couple, 2-3 weeks. Watch what happens. I think Michigan's going to win the whole thing.
Michigan?
Yeah.
Michigan. Well, by the way, I think Austin Davis is going to be playing against Luca Garza. He couldn't play yesterday. He's got a foot injury, but he's.
No, I don't think so. I like Austin Davis, but as I said on the show the other day, they're not going to miss him much. He's a good player. I like him off the bench. He is not as good as Hunter Dickinson. I think Hunter's going to take over the starting job.
All right. Well, let's get going here because I want to be I want us to be ready for talk to Mike Hanneman in 5 or 6 minutes. So is Phil Lynn's in your obituaries today?
Phil, well, I was going to let you do that. Did you know Phil? I met him in New York.
Oh, I knew Phil real well. Real
super nice guy. What a nice guy.
He kept Mr. Laughs. He had a place.
Yeah. With Shamsky. With Shamsky, right?
With Shamsky, yeah. Oh, I got to call Shamsky back.
Art Shamsky.
The bottom line with him was that whenever he knew a club was coming in, he'd keep Mr. Laughs open till we arrived. You know, nice. And it wasn't unbelievable that we showed up at 2:30 in the morning, 3 o'clock.
That's
the bars
great.
Don't close till 4 unless you're a baseball player, and then they never close.
Well, he died at 81 of Parkinson's and dementia, a sad combination that's all too common. Hit only .235 at 11 homers in 7 years, but he did play for the Yankees in the World Series in 64 because Tony Kubek was hurt. But the story that what made him famous, especially in New York, and what's so interesting about it is that back then reporters traveled with the team. There's no way that happens anymore. Reporters cannot be on the bus. Reporters can't be on the plane with the team anymore. But they were there. And Lynn's, after they had lost a series, they got swept by the White Sox, and it was a tough series. They're driving to the airport to go to Boston after they lost the 4 straight. And Lynn's had got this harmonica as a toy, and he's playing "Mary Had a Little Lamb" in the back. So Berra stands up in the front and says, "Shut up," you know, or "put that thing away." And so Lynn's, who was playing, didn't hear any. Says to Mantle, who's sitting next to him, he says to Mantle, he said, "Mickey, did Yogi say?" And Mantle, of course, said, "Yeah, Yogi said play it louder." So, of course, he continues to play. And you know Mantle better than anybody else. So that was what he was like. He was kind of a practical joker like that. So whether Yogi came to the back, whether Lynn's threw it at him or he swatted it away, bottom line was that Lynn's apologized. Yogi said, "Listen, I fined him $250 out of his $14,000 salary." But it was a national story, and it's what Phil Lynn's remained famous for. And they did finish 22-6 in September. Mel Stottlemyre, who we talked about on an earlier show with his son Todd, was called up, went 9-3 the rest of the way, and of course they lost to the Cardinals in 7 games. Yogi fired after the season. Johnny Keene hired, and that was a strange thing too, because Ralph Houk fired Yogi the day after the season, even though they had made it to the World Series. Anyway, who else you got in obituaries?
No, this is not enough. This isn't a death. Unfortunately, it's a death sentence, as we just saw with Alex Trebek. The great Tom Weisskopf, last week, diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. He began his first chemotherapy treatment on Thursday, 78 now. The winner of 16 PGA Tour titles, another 4 on the Champions Tour, said, "Tom, I've got a very rough 4 to 6 months ahead of me. I had my first chemo today, and the treatment lasted 7 hours. The rest of the cocktail through my portable pump for 46 hours, and then I get to rest for up to 10 to 12 days before the next round." Pancreatic cancer is just a killer, and it's among so many diseases that we will solve. Unfortunately, we ain't solved it yet.
So Chuck Daly died of in 2009.
Nobody in the world ever hit the ball harder than Tom Weisskopf.
Yeah, he was big. Yeah.
Oh man, did he hit the ball hard? He hit rockets.
The Palmer Nicholas player era, and just wasn't able to push past those guys. But he was a great player.
Right. I saw, you know, I don't know if you guys. Well, not only you guys. I'm sure you've seen it 3 times. It's kind of a hagiography. I didn't care that much for it, but ESPN's 1 hour documentary on the life of Tiger Woods, conveniently omitting all the problems he got into. One of the comments in the thing came from Zinger. The Paul Azinger said he'd never seen Tiger Woods hit a golf ball, but they'd heard all about him. So now they're out there and they're going to play with him, and he's talking with his caddy. As Tiger steps up to the first tee, and Azinger says to his caddy, let's see this kid. Let's see how good this kid is. And he says, Tiger addresses the ball. He smacks it. He says, "We just looked at it and said, never, ever seen anybody hit a golf ball."
See, I don't quite get that. I'm sure it's true, but I mean, they all hit the ball so amazingly. I thought Tiger's greatness was just his ability to win. Yeah. Not just, you know, they all make incredible sounds when they hit the ball. It's you dream about hitting the ball as pure as they do.
But you can tell when a guy hits it a little bit harder. If you stand up there with him on the tee, you can tell the difference is a shotgun and a little 33 or 38 or whatever the hell they call it. But he could, my God, Weisskopf just hit it meteors. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Yeah. Hey, Eli, I got a question for you. We all want to know, what did happen on this day in sports?
Well, I'm so glad you asked. In 1935,
you thought I'd never ask.
The NFL football championship, the Lions beat the Giants in the first Lions' first title in 1935.
Holy cow.
On this day in 53, the Dodgers signed Sandy Koufax. And on this day in 56, the Dodgers traded Jackie Robinson, the great Jackie Robinson, the Giants, for Dick Littlefield and $35,000, but he retired rather than be traded to the Giants.
And I read, when I read Jackie's biography as a boy, it just blew my mind. They hated, those teams hated each other so much. Think about this in terms of modern sports. When they got rid of Jackie and he went to the New York Giants, he said, I'm not playing for the effing Giants. And he retired from baseball rather than play for the hated New York Giants.
Yep. This day,
that was the reason he quit. That was it.
Well, I think he was tired also. He played long enough. He was at the end of his career.
A lot of pressure.
Yeah. But I saw my first game in 57, the Dodgers and the Giants. And I regret that I never got to see Jackie Robinson play. This day in 83, the Pistons were in still the highest scoring NBA game. They beat Denver 186-184 in three overtimes. God. That's the night that John Long had 47 points and he wasn't the leading scorer. But
wasn't that the night? Yeah, Trapuka and Kiki Vandeweghe just traded baskets all night long, right? I remember that game.
Yeah. This was the day in 07 that the Mitchell Report released the name of 89 major league players presumed to use steroids and growth hormone, including Roger.
You know what they forgot to do, don't you? They forgot to identify the players.
Yeah, that's right. Identified a few. This day in 1980, the richest contract in baseball history, Dave Winfield signed a 10-year, $15 million contract. Yeah. I think they make that every at-bat, some guys these days. And, those are some of the things that happened.
Yeah, I tell you, Eli will corroborate this. When we were working locker rooms a long time ago, there were certain guys on every ball club. In the American League, we were in an American League city, where you knew not to approach because they were pricks. Other guys, you knew they were complete gentlemen.
Sure.
Respect for what we did, and they knew you had a job. And Dave Winfield was one of those guys. If he went 0 for 5 and grounded into two double plays and they lost the game, you could always talk to Winfield. He treated us with respect. He was
always
a
gentleman.
Guy.
Well, when I got to work in New York in 1986, and George, there were a lot of very reluctant Yankees to talk because they were all getting in trouble. And that's the year that he called Winfield Mr. May, and Dave oftentimes said, I really can't talk right now. He was polite about it, but nobody wanted to be quoted saying anything when the boss was angry.
You know, Winfield and I are exactly the same age. And I remember when I was at Michigan State watching Minnesota play basketball, both against State and against, I think, the University of Detroit. He was one hell of a basketball player.
Who's the guy that he led the attack on Luke Whitty, the Ohio State center, the famous brawl between the Minnesota Gophers.
Yeah, Winfield was on that team. I don't think he had anything to do with the attack itself.
Well, he was there on the court at the time.
That was Ron Brewer and Corky B. Hagen.
Mike Henneman coming up in a couple of minutes. Bob, what you got in the mailbag?
First of all, you can tweet us at MU2Denny or at Bob Page Sports. And on our interview with Thomas Sebron in the last program, the former standout defensive end at Michigan, who really has become such a successful business executive in Detroit and has worked so hard in the community as well. James Harris writes, in the interview with Tom, I was surprised at Bo working the team so hard at practice at the Rose Bowl. That might explain Bo's abysmal Rose Bowl record. Remember, they lost three times when Sebron was on the club. And Tom pretty much admitted the same thing. Eli, you covered a bunch of those games. I always felt the Big Ten was in a tough spot to begin with out there because the Rose Bowl was basically a home game for the Pac-10 team, especially for USC and UCLA, which are in the LA area. That it didn't help either that Bo didn't open the game up and throw more. And Tom made reference to that as well.
My number one memory, I'll tell you real quick, of covering the Rose Bowl was, I guess it was the 1979 game with the Charles White game when the Phantom touchdown. And I was in a hotel room, which is tiny, at the Huntington, whatever they called it there, Sheraton. About 10 Wolverines in this room, including the legendary Reggie McKenzie. And somebody asked him a question about how to do a block. And here you got these two behemoths, 6'5", 270, this tiny little 8x10 room, you know, standing up, going at each other and going, this is just too tight in here. I'm going to get smashed against the wall and die. But, you know, fun covering the Rose Bowl. And of course, we didn't get to go to practices or anything, so I didn't get to see much.
And as Tom, as Tom said, there's nothing really wrong in life with being number two. They lost three straight years to, you know, to in the Rose Bowl, but you can't win everything. D-Champ Green wrote us and said, congratulations on podcast number 200. Sweet show. Sebron was another reflective Wolverine. Nice interview. Now, from my journalistic side, these University of Michigan interviews you guys have been doing are likely better without asking about Dr. Anderson and the sex scandal. I haven't mentioned it in the notes I've written to you in the past. That said, this interview with Tom was so focused on Bo Schembechler, the positives of his lessons in the program. There were many opportunities to ask about this. Did you consider? In my philosophy, you know, I did, in one sense, I kind of forgot to ask Sebron about it, but I don't think I would have. We've asked so many ex-Michigan players about this sex scandal with Anderson. He obviously was guilty. Kind of seems like beating a dead horse at this point in time. Rob Vile says, congrats on the milestone. Keep them coming, boys. Love the show. Thanks for the great content. Spanky Jenkins says, congrats on 200 episodes. And with Eli deciding not to take part in the show that day, it also meant he wasn't there to sweat another mailbag. And that prompted listener Clausen Bibbins to write simply, this is all he wrote, mailbag one, Eli nothing. Joe Cucci says, you knuckleheads just keep doing it. You let Eli take off and I have to listen to a fill-in. It's like watching a Three Stooges marathon and a Shemp episode comes up. Then Denny takes off and a Joe episode comes on. At first, there's disappointment. Then we listen and we come to realize all the Stooges are worthy. Thanks for the entertainment, boys. And Joe, thank you for a great analogy, because the noted vaudevillian team of Horowitz, Horowitz and Feinberg are among my greatest heroes in life. Eli, it's an honor to even be mentioned with the boys, you know? Website submissions, contact us at nofiltersportspodcast.com. Email us at asknofilter@gmail.com. Jerry Eversman says, Tom Sebron. Now, that was an interview in capital letters. If every athlete had his deep appreciation of the opportunities that have been afforded to them, the world would be a better place. Kudos to the show and to the staff member who lined up that interview with Sebron. Jerry, that staff member was me. 760-89-BALLS is the number to call.
Of course, Bob.
Yes.
You know what? I should have, all the interviews I've gotten, I should have mentioned that I was the guy that got it. That could have patted myself in the back a little bit, but
sure,
I forgot to. I'm sorry.
We just want you to do the show every now and then. Then you can pat yourself in the back, all right? 760-89-BALLS is the number to call. You can leave a message for us there or text us. Dave Hockman says, you guys were quite critical of Andrea Adelson for her take on the female place kicker Sarah Fuller. I suggest you get Andrea on the show. She's actually a really good sports writer. She covers the ACC conference. That includes Larry Sorensen's beloved Wake Forest and Bob's beloved Duke. She'd be a good guest. She'd be able to defend herself as well as to discuss the college football playoff situation. But the witty, ever popular, unnamed texter counters by saying, Sarah Fuller got the SEC Special Teams Player of the Week for her 30-yard squib kick. By kicking two extra points this past weekend, she's bound to get at least a few Heisman Trophy votes.
What if she cooked three? Woo, that'd have been unbelievable. Yeah,
how about that? Eli, introduce our guest, please.
All right. Mike Henneman, who George Kell would probably call a big strapping 6'4" right-hander, was called up to
That's
the major.
Not what Kell would say. He'd he's a big right-hander, throws extremely hard.
Okay. Came up, called up to the majors in May 87, appeared in 55 games, went 11-3, 2.98 ERA, named AL Rookie Pitcher of the Year. Second in Tiger career saves behind only Todd Jones. Now, in the final dash to the 87 division title as a rookie, the Tigers needed to sweep three games with the Blue Jays. Mike got the save in Friday's 4-3 win, got the win in Saturday's 3-2 victory, and with a tired arm was in the bullpen at the ready when Frank Tanana ended the 1-0 thrilling clincher.
Two down, Orange is the batter. Little swimmer.
Oh, my God.
Yes, and there's Mike. You do remember that, don't you? By the way, happy birthday. You turned 59 Friday night. Jeez, you're old. My goodness.
Oh, thank you very much, Eli. Thank you for reminding me. Yeah.
How old is he?
He's 59. Mike? You got underwear older than that, right, Denny?
I got underwear twice as old.
Dude, you got undies that you've been wearing for about 80 years.
Yeah, I'll send you a, I'll send you a pair autographed.
And Denny doesn't wash them very often either, unfortunately.
Every other week.
Now, before we get too deep into this, I was doing Pistons sideline reporting probably about 2007, 2008. And we're playing the Mavericks, and I go to the baseline there to do my little thing, and I look up.
Oh, shit.
Who do I see but this dude who's got a dimple in his chin bigger than the Grand Canyon? It's Mike Henneman. I go, what the hell are you doing here? He goes, what are you doing here? But anyway, you did retire to Texas, and what are you up to these days? Catch us up. I know you did some.
I am just, I'm living life great, working with kids, trying to tell them not what I did, and trying to teach them what they should do. Working with kids and just hanging out with the wife and the kids. And, you know, I've had a very fortunate deal that happened. I was adopted, and I think y'all read that stuff.
Yeah.
Fascinating story.
I go down and see my little brother, who is, he's 2 years younger than me. I fly down to Cincinnati, and I go to Kentucky where his lake house is, and he and I cook steaks, make a fire, play marbles, and we just have a good time. And I am very fortunate, and that's all because of my wife. She did the DNA.
Tell that story. Stop for a second.
I needed to know who the hell I was.
But Mike, got to give the background, because your fellow rookie in 87 was Jeff Robinson.
Jeffrey, Dino. Mm-hmm.
He tragically died at age 52. This was in 2014, I believe it was.
Yeah.
And then you somehow, how did you hook up, or how did you get to know or revisit?
Okay, the
was
whole
it at the funeral?
The point is right here, and I'll make it really easy. You know, we, Detroit, played. The Royals, and we went to a burger joint. Jeff and I had a beer and a burger, and this hostess, she was hot. And I go, Dino, and I go, check that out. So they got together, and they were married 21 years, and they got twin boys that are 24 right now. And her and I were friends. I mean, we just talked all the effing time. You know, they came down to Texas for a birthday party, and my ex-wife goes, I can see you two together because you just talk. And I'm like, you're kind of weird. What are you talking about? And so be it. I got divorced. Jeffrey passed. And we kept talking, and I checked on Jeff's boys, Chase and Rain, because he asked me to. So, And then we kept talking, and she goes, you're moving out. You know, your daughter's got to go back to your mother, and your lease is up and all that noise. Why don't you come and let's see what happens? Well, January 4th, it'll be 2 years of marriage.
Good for you.
Yeah. We're best friends. I mean, it's
she pushed you into the DNA thing. Explain that. It's an amazing story.
Oh yeah. She knew my adoption kind of bothered me. I mean, it didn't bother me, but who is my folks, my blood? So she got me in that DNA test, Ancestry, and I took it and come back and, it showed the Hart family, who lives in Cincy. Long story short, I got 5 brothers and 2 sisters.
Yeah,
that you never knew about till you were in your 50 in your 50s.
I never knew. You know what it would have been cool is if I would have known back then, because when I was in AA, I pitched against Cincinnati in the Sandlot game. And I was in Cincinnati, but it would have been cool to, have my brothers and my sisters there.
Sure.
So me and my brother, Johnny, we are tight as a drum. I mean, we are, that's where I go down to Kentucky, to his lake house. And
so explain, what happened was, is that your father, your father, who had six or seven kids, had an affair, and you were the result of the affair. So you're really, these are your half brothers and sisters.
He's my half brother. Yeah. But we get along so well. We talk every day. My father was he was unique.
One of the greatest things I ever did in my life, and this is number one, is I adopted, my wife and I adopted two boys.
Oh, beautiful.
When they were, one was 4 days old, the other was 3 days old, Denny and Timmy. And of course, they still do well. One lives in Australia and the other one lives in Georgia, Atlanta area. So I just want to tell you, there's nothing so special as an adopted child. Nothing.
You know
nothing.
What? Bless your heart for doing that, because I feel, you know, after finding out all my family, because I go to Cincy, see my brothers and my sisters, and definitely I go to Kentucky to the lake house so he and I can hang out. There's that. That's beautiful. That's good for you.
And you were lucky, because we were talking about this Queen's Gambit, which is on Netflix, where she was adopted. And, you know, and the nice thing about watching was that the person who adopted her was really a sweet woman. You're lucky, too. You got adopted by people that loved you and gave you a great home. Yeah. It could have gone the other way, which is nice to see. So let's talk a little about your career, okay? You come up in 87. You were drafted several times. The Tigers draft you, and you're 25 years old. You're ready to play. You have a great spring training, and Sparky, that SOB, sends you down to Toledo, and you have a really bad attitude. Talk about how you went from that to becoming Rookie of the Year.
Okay, I'll tell you about that one. I had a very good spring training, and I'm like, I think I'm going to make this. I don't know. I got to keep doing my deal. And I get called in, Terzuski, Dick. Trixie goes, Mike, Sparky wants to see you. And I'm like, mother, okay, okay. And I walk into his office, and he goes, Mike, I got to send you down, but you'll be up quick. I go, Skip, I didn't give shit up. Can you give me a reason? And he gave me the reason. And he was going to take Brian Kelly to the big leagues so he could trade him and get some worth out of him. If he's in the big leagues, he gets worth, you know, somebody good. I don't know who the hell he got.
Sure.
And I'm like, okay. So I went to Toledo with an attitude. I mean, if the game was close, I'll go down to the bullpen. If the game ain't, I'm staying in the locker room. It's cold. And had a pretty good year there. And then Gibby came down, Kirk, because he had that rib injury. You know, he came down and fly back and all that kind of crap. And then he goes back, and then Willie gets hurt. And Skip asked Kirk, who's throwing well? Gibby said me, and I was up. And I kept that attitude that I had in Toledo, like, y'all can kiss my you-know-what.
Yeah.
When I get on the mound. And it worked out well. I mean, it worked out well. I got lucky.
He had some talent, too, for goodness sake. You were a college baseball World Series star at Oklahoma State. You're talking about some of these magic names. You talk about some of these magic names in Tigers history, Sparky, Willie Hernandez, and Gibby. Now, there isn't any among us who hasn't played 21 before. Some people call it blackjack.
Oh,
you played at home.
But
there's a different game called 21 that you used to play with Gibby. Tell us about that.
Okay, here's what we do. Gibby and I would go out to left field, Tiger State, everywhere. And we played 21, you know, above the waist to the chest is 1 point. The head, when you're playing catch, is 2 points. But he cheated. If I throw the ball and hit him in the face, and he was about as accurate as nut. And he catch the ball and move the ball to the left side or right side. I go, Gibby, that's 2 points. He goes, nope, you missed. I go, you're such a jerk. we played all the time. That was beautiful because we'd be screaming and hollering. And fans would come in and they'd go like, what the heck is going on here?
I'm like, what's the object? How do you play the game? What are the rules?
It's accurate throwing.
The rules are you're like 45 to 50 feet away, and you're playing catch.
Right.
So you're playing catch, and if you hit the guy in the belly, you know, in the glove, the belly, that's 1 point. If you hit him in the head, that's 2 points, and you play to 21. Well, uh-huh. He would cheat because he'd get the ball, and I'd hit him in the head, and he'd move that son of a biscuit over to the right or left side.
Well, it was a stupid game for him to play. He's a scatter-armed outfielder, and you're a pitcher who can and he says hit the ass on a skunk.
I knew where the ball was going.
Why is he playing you in the first place?
Did you play for money? Were you playing for money?
Friends. I mean, he's just a cheating son of a biscuit.
They call that competitive.
Did you play for money, Mike, you and Gibby?
No. We played for friendship and just having a good time. That's all that was about. But he still cheated me, and I wish I would have played for money because I'd have it recorded and make him pay me.
Well, of course he cheated. You had some great years
cheated.
Here.
Of course he cheated.
He cheated.
Yeah, had some great years here, including the All-Star. I think the most amazing stat is the '89 Tigers that were garbage, awful team. In fact, I bet I could name three or four guys on that team that you don't even remember you played with. Do you remember Ramon Pena? Do you remember Sean Holman? Yep. Do you remember David Pollard?
Ramon Pena was my roommate in AA.
Okay.
In Birmingham, Alabama. The little short Dominican sidearm knucklehead. He was my roommate, Ramon.
Well, that was a tough one then. But the guys on that team, because I remember I was on doing Channel 2. The team was awful. It was 103 games that year. And 46 players came in and out of town. You know, your beloved teammates, Bergie, Lou Allen, Lemon, Morris, etc. Yeah. But, man, the cast of characters. Remember Brian Dubois?
Yes, I do. Left-hander. Doobie. You're trying to. I'm not that
catch
old. Doobie.
Anyway, tell the story. Great article on you in the Free Press not long ago by Bill Dow, who's a personal friend of ours, and wrote a beautiful story on you. And tell us the story from 89, which was that awful season when you had a lousy West Coast trip and Sparky took you on a special trip when you got back to Detroit. Tell us that story.
Lord,
was you found a
I don't point. Think I could get anybody out. I could get shit out. I couldn't even get my daughter out. And, we fly back from out there in L.A., Oakland, Seattle, the whole nine yards. And my ex-wife was pregnant with my oldest son. I get off the bus and, Skip sat right there in the front right seat. And I got off and she was standing there and I walked right past her.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't want no part of talking to her. I thought I was going to get released. I mean, I sucked. And I walked past her. And long story short, next day, get a phone call. And she answers. And she goes, Mike is Sparky. I go, oh, great. I'm done. I knew I sucked. I'm done. And he goes, meet me at the stadium. We got to do something. So I go, okay, Skip. So we went down to Henry Ford. I got in the car. We went down there and he shows me all these cancer kids. And he goes, he's got 2 months. She's got 3 weeks. And how you doing? Are you okay? What do you think about these, little kiddos right here? And I'm like, oh, I knew what he was doing. And I'm like, yes, sir, I understand. I mean, throwing a freaking baseball, doesn't matter when you come to life and death.
Right.
And these little babies are sitting there, they ain't got, they're in trouble. And then he says to me, if you ever, and this is on the drive back to the stadium, if you ever walk by your wife and do what you did, you will never, ever, and I will guarantee you, never, ever play baseball again. And I can do that. I'm like, I am really screwed right here. And Skip was awesome.
Yeah.
There's so many stories I could say. Skip was awesome. I mean, he really was.
Yeah, we all miss
some him. Of the guys we've had on the show, your ex-teammates, did not like Sparky, but you did.
Oh, yeah, I did. Yes, I did. I think the world of him. I mean, he had his ways, but I liked him. I mean, I remember in Toronto playing the Blue Jays, and he goes, "Michael, watch this. I am going to so F with these reporters, it's not even going to be funny, and they're going to come out shaking their heads like, what the hell did I say? You know, what did he say?" Skip was awesome. I loved him. Jeff, you know, my buddy, he didn't like him. And I'm just like, Skip will skip. You leave him alone, let him do his stuff. I loved him.
And Mike, did you join the rodeo?
You son of a biscuit.
Well,
I just went to the feed store and got me a bale of hay and shoot. I knew that was going to come up.
Well, why'd you quit at 34?
And I got some fake calf horns and a new rope, fastback. I got to teach these young gentlemen, stepkids, you know, city ain't right, country's cool. So, yes, yeah, I did join the rodeo. I did it for 10 years.
10 wow. years? How many broken bones?
And I am paying the darn price. I had a ranch in Texas. I had built the arena with lights and all that stuff. And Randy White, y'all know that name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We used to rodeo together. And I traveled. And then certain nights... you know, you get a little frisky. And I had my chute where I put the calves in. And then when you get frisky, you stand on top of the chute and let the chute open, and you jump on top of a calf.
Oh, God. Please don't tell me this story's going to end the way I think.
I'm sorry, but I did.
This is what you really call a relief pitcher now.
Yeah, it's kind of fool.
Oh. So,
but
Eli just asked you why you quit.
Yeah.
96, your last year with Texas, you were 0-7 with a 5.79. I guess that answers Eli's question.
Oh, well, but he had a great year.
You hurt your arm, right?
Wait, he had a great year in 95. He had a terrific year when they traded him. So that's what I asked you.
Yeah, 96, I sucked. It was kind of funny because I sat there and I thought about it after I retired after that season. And I told him before, like at the three quarters of the way through the season, I said, I'm done. My shit don't work. I'm really, it's broke. But yeah, 0-7 and went a 5, and I was embarrassed, but I had 31 saves, something like that, most of my career, but I stunk.
Yeah.
We had a good year in 95.
I remember George Bush coming up to me after we lost to the Yankees and said, thank you so very much for everything and blah, 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 blah. We couldn't have done it without you, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know what? I wish I could have done better for y'all.
When you went to Houston, Bob Watson said, mm-hmm. I want you to be a closer, and I want to put you next to Todd Jones. He can teach you how to close out games. Well, he's the only guy ahead of you in the Tiger list. Isn't that strange?
That was gonna come up. Yes, I went down there, walked through the door, Greg Swindell and Biz and Bags. Henny, how you doing? Good. And then Bay comes up and says, your locker's over there. Teach that boy how to close a game out. Lo and behold, it was Todd Jones. And I'm like, okay, what's his problem? You'll find out. Which I did. And I'm like, okay. I go, Jonesy, I can't say what I want to say, but what is your problem? You throw 95, 96 with a very good curveball. Do you not have the cojones to just drill them if they're leaning on you and close it out? Well, you can't do that. I'm like, oh, my God, now I'm really in a mess. So anyhow, I'll never forget the day we played the Mets. And I'll never forget this. Biggio and Bags goes, Henny, where is Brokel, Dougie, very good friend. Where is Jonesy? I go, I don't know. I'm not his babysitter. Come to find out, he had closed out the game because I had closed the last two. Come to find out, he went on the Mets bus because he had drilled a guy and went on the bus to apologize.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm sitting in the locker, and Dougie Brokel and Biz goes, are you going to stay right here till you see him? And I said, well, I've been given two orders. One to close games out and one to teach this kid. So he comes in. I go, where the hell have you been? Well, Mike, I went to the bus and apologized. You did what? For drilling a guy? Are you kidding me, young man? You never apologize. You do it on purpose if you're going to do it, which I never did. I was not like that guy.
You had a great year, your first year in 87, and Tiger fans will never forget how that season wound up with all those one-run games and the championship series. Take us back to that time. It must have been pretty exciting for you guys.
I mean, I was pretty much numb about it. You know, you're just happier than Hades to be in the show. And honest to gosh, I was happy to be there. Yeah. And I was fighting my tail off to stay there. But that Toronto series, oh, my Lord. I think I went through 20 pair of underwear. Oh my. I mean, it was just incredible. So intense. Two great teams. To me, in my mind, it was the World Series. And Frank Tanano, I couldn't believe what he did that last day. It was awesome. I mean, Frankie didn't have crap. He had a fastball, curveball, changeup, and threw about 30 miles an hour. Yeah. But he just made those guys look like, you know, fools. Yeah. I will never forget going to the stadium the final day. It was a day game, and the whole place was packed. Parking lots, everything. You know, everybody, you know, cooking on the grill and all that kind of stuff. And I go, wow, now here's baseball. Pretty cool.
Mike, is that what happened in the series with the Twins? Did you guys leave it all out on the field against Toronto? Is that why you lost the championship series?
Yeah. I mean, we they were hot, but I swear to gosh, everything we had went into the series with Toronto. I mean, Toronto, and then who'd they play? They played Milwaukee, I think. Yeah.
You put Baltimore in between.
And we played Baltimore, and we just, you know, it just ended up how it ended up. But we gave so much of ourselves, especially at Toronto. It was it's something I got. You asked me about that, and my left leg has got a chill on it. It was the most. No, I'm.
You're not peeing on your leg, are you?
Well, you go back and look at that stuff. The stadium is packed. It was packed Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It was I mean, I looked at the video and I found that little clip that we played beforehand. And what a just different sight. Tiger Stadium was such an amazing place in the first place. To be packed like that, the excitement and everything. It's so sad what's happened today with baseball. It's just the players are still great. But, yeah, you can't duplicate that without fans in the stands. It was just an amazing sight, something we really miss deeply, all of us, I'm sure.
You know, with all this bull trash going on, COVID, I just go back to that day. The stadium was just full, and all the Tiger fans and all that. Toronto had their little section, which did not compare to ours.
Sure.
But it was just beautiful. I mean, it was like, holy cow.
My last question for you. How come you never became a star? Did they ever give you an opportunity
to start?
To what?
To start.
Be a starting pitcher.
I got told in instructional ball by Billy Muffet, you're going to make it to the big leagues, you're going to be a reliever. So don't even think about starting. I did start one game in Double A because the guy went down. Billy asked me, will you do it? And I said, I don't care. Just give me the ball. I don't give a toot. I'll give you what I got. Oh, I did start in Venezuela against Caracas. Yeah. But no, I never, you know, they told me from the get-go, Detroit did, that if you're going to make it, you're going to be a reliever. And then I remember Skip going, you want to close? And I'm like, close what? Close out games. I'm like, you're going to be the GOAT or the hero? You're going to get booed or applauded? I'm like, I don't care. Just give me the ball.
And Mike, you were the highest paid reliever in all of Major League Baseball at one time. And that's something for an organization.
Oh, my God. You want to go to there? It's because I deferred my contract. It was $10.5 million. And I deferred my final season at $4.5 million. And I remember waking up in Oakland, and, you know, you get the USA Today at your door. And then there's my picture. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Y'all don't know everything that went on. I deferred all that money to the end.
You still got a little of it?
I think my ex-wife's got a lot of bit of it.
Yeah, that's the
problem. Denny's a little short this week. He can use a little help if you got deferred money left laying around. Hey, Mikey, great catching up to with you, man. It's good talking to you again. It's a great story. You're finding your family and everything, and your story in the big leagues and all that. So thanks for joining us.
And marrying Jeff Robinson's widow and everything. Yeah. Thanks so much, Mike. You're always a great guy. Great to deal with. We appreciate that.
Oh, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. I try. Okay.
Mike, take care. Good luck to you, and stay safe. You hear?
Take care, y'all.
You know, I asked him, you know, 59 is not old, and he says he's tired of the traveling. He just he loves to work with people. He loves to talk to younger people about pitching, but he just doesn't want to get back into baseball. He wants to be a homebody now and deal with his wife and his family and be where he is. So good for him.
I would admit I'm getting real tired of traveling, but now that I've had a year off, I want to go travel. Please let me travel.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. We will see you again on Thursday for another edition of No Filter Sports. We'll be right back.